Welcome back to the Real Anime Podcast. I'm your host. I'm going to be talking about Mushoku Tensei Volume 7. So just a little background again. So Mushoku Tensei, the first 23 episodes of the anime covered the first six light novels. And I'm going to be reviewing Volume 7 on. And I'm just going to do each... each future podcast for a little bit is going to be dedicated to Mushoku Tensei and discussing what happens in the volume. So there will be spoilers if you're anime only. So if you want to know what's going to happen in the upcoming season, then stick around and listen. So first of all, I'd like to discuss a little bit about the kind of bare information about this volume. So the synopsis of this is that Rudeus goes to the city in Rosenberg to search for his mother Zenith, and he, despite all his failed attempts to find her, Eris is like when Eris left him, this just leaves Rudeus in an absolutely crushed mental state. So because this weighs so heavily on his heart, Rudeus ends up gambling on this idea that he's going to accept an A-rank adventure by himself. And so that's a very brief synopsis of what's going to happen in 7. So we're going to break it down further. I'm going to kind of go over how many chapters there are. Let's keep in mind that Volume 7 is actually a very short volume. There's only 6 chapters. There's a prologue, and then there's 6 chapters and an epilogue, as well as an extra chapter titled The Ruler of Rinoa University of Magic. Okay? Now, as far as how they're going to do this in the anime, I'm not really sure if they're going to start from the end and work backwards, because they have a couple of ways that they could adapt this. Seeing as it's so short, they could even make a movie out of this. I don't really know if that's what they want to do. I don't think they're going to make a movie, though. They can easily wrap this volume up in probably, 2 episodes, maybe 3 if they push it, but I would say they could probably wrap this entire light novel up in two episodes, especially if they did the Demon Slayer approach to make the very first episode somewhere in the range of 45 minutes. So all that being said, let's get into kind of what happens and where Rudy's at mentally and everything. And for this purpose of this review, I'm actually going to start and work backwards, okay? I'm going to start with the extra chapter, which is at the end of the light novel. And the reason why I'm going to start with the extra chapter is because, again, I think that when they adapt this in the anime, I have a gut feeling that's where they're going to start. Because of how the ending of 23 happened, like with the extra scenes where you see Sylphie recommending Rudeus to go to this, prestigious Rinoa University of Magic, all these things, and you got all the other people that you saw during the execution of the Boreas head guy when he was getting executed there. You see the blonde-headed woman and her, a couple of her attendants are up there, like, viewing that. And they're featured in that final scene of the anime. And they're skeptical of Rudeus's abilities, and so they want to recruit him if he can actually do these things. So keep in mind that the anime did leave out something very key about that particular, I guess, engagement. They didn't really show you what Rudeus, or what they called him. They only refer to it as, Rudeus Gurira, and that's, kind of where they go. In the light novel, it's slightly different, and I got a feeling they changed it in the anime just for a temporary, and I think that when the anime comes back, they'll probably switch it back and follow what the light novel did. So I'm going to start with the extra chapter. So the extra chapter is The Ruler of Rinoa University of Magic. And in this extra chapter, it basically just details out who the characters that you saw in the first seat, in the part 2 of the first season, who they were. So you've got the second princess of the kingdom. You've got this, she's like a princess, her name's Ariel, and she's got her little attendants, and she's going to be like either next in line to the throne or she's second in line to the throne. But anyway, none of that really matters currently. So she leaves her kingdom because there's like, there's a lot of, I guess, internal conflict and war going on internally in her her kingdom. So when they send her off to this Renoa University of Magic, her goal is to gain enough like power, manpower, and influence so that she can go back to her kingdom and then take it over. Okay, so she has 3 attendants, and in this flashback, it explains she joins the school, and her immediate goal after she talks to her attendants, she's got Luke Grayrat. That's like her personal little bodyguard. Then there is, what's the other girl's name? There's another adventurer, or another person that is her. Well, anyway, there's another person there that is part of her team. And then there's this mysterious character who is an elf with white hair, and they are wearing like these black sunglasses that cover their eyes. Okay, and the name of this character is Fitz. Okay, so they enter this school as first year students, and Ariel gets the idea that she wants to get on the student council as soon as possible so that she can become the student council president and thereby eventually rule the school and have enough influence to, I guess, get her name out there, gain enough prominence, gain enough power, gain enough manpower so she can go back to her kingdom. So, these schools are 7-year schools. Keep this in mind too. So when you enroll in this school, you're there for 7 years. We do find out that there are exceptions, and this will be explained later in Volume 8. There are exceptions, but currently in Volume 7, they don't really explain this. So when she enters the school, there happen to be a lot of different type of people that are in this school, from beast people to elves to dwarves to, you know, humans to just all sorts of creatures that are found throughout this like whole story can go up there. And the school never once discriminates against any race of people or type of people. They always allow their traditions and their customs to like carry over, and for them to do, you know, whatever it is that they normally do out in their normal tribes, they're kind of allowed to do this in the Renoa Kingdom of Magic, as long as it doesn't involve killing anybody or anything like that. And there's also this whole like hidden political factor where like they're afraid to upset the balance between certain tribes of people, so they really let people kind of do what they want, and this actually backfires on them in some situations. But as we find out as the book goes on, that Ariel is able to get this under control going in her direction. So basically there happens to be two Dolia princesses there from the Dolia tribe. So if you remember the Dolia tribe, they're the beast tribe where Ghislaine's from. They were shown in Part 2 of Season 1, whenever Rudeus was captured and thrown in jail. If you remember, when they were talking, the father said that he had sent off a couple of his like daughters off for training elsewhere because they were hopeless, right? These two are the two of the two princesses that he's referring to. And they're going to be, you know, eventually the next leaders of the Dolia tribe, blah, blah, blah. And they already kind of rule the school. They're also first years as well. And they're ruling over, well, they're not first years. They're second years, I think. Second years. Anyway, they've become delinquents, okay? They beat up everybody. they bully people. They use their crazy magic to fight against people. And the way they fight is like a tactical approach. One of the, and their names are Lena or Linia and Persnia. Persia and Lenia. And one's a cat woman, one's a dog woman. And one uses like a vocal magic where they send out a vocal wave of magic to then just absolutely blitz their opponent while the other one goes in for a full melee attack. And usually they just 1-2 punch everybody they fight. And they don't really run into any issues and they just beat everybody. And the school is having trouble stopping Lenia and Persia from doing this because they don't want to offend the Dolia tribe. So if they step in and they end up offending them, they're afraid that they might go to war with the Dolia tribe. So they're and they don't want that. So the Dolia princesses are taking advantage of this and are just becoming really, really bad people during their time at school. They're taking advantage of and just being absolute pieces of garbage, okay? And Ariel is getting picked on by these two princesses because they see Ariel as an inferior princess. They don't respect Ariel. And of course, her attendants are very upset over this whole situation. And they don't want Ariel to be, you know, picked on like this. And they're frustrated with Ariel for not, like, stepping up. And so Ariel gets a plan in her head. And it all culminates with Lenia and Persia. They end up stealing Ariel's panties. Okay? So this is kind of a silly thing, but they steal her panties. And they end up showing them out to everybody to basically try and embarrass Ariel. And then Ariel eventually uses her knowledge of the beast people and their excellent hearing against them. And in a clash in the school, in front of a lot of people, Ariel whispers something that is so low that only the beast people could hear it, but no one in the crowd could hear it, so that it would appear that the beast people were the ones that started the fight. Because Ariel had come to the conclusion that she needed the beast people to start the fight with them, not the other way around, in order for them to win over the school and win over, like get their way and get to the top of the student council. They needed to go through Lenia and Persia because they were just blocking anything from happening. So she whispers, you know, some inappropriate, you know, very rude things to Lenia and Persia. Of course, Lenia and Persia hear it. No one else hears it. And when the fight gets underway, after Ariel vehemently denies that she said anything, she basically tricks the crowd into believing that Lenia and Persia have started this fight. Here they come. And then sure enough, Fitz, this mysterious Fitz character that you saw in the final episode, which, look, we will get to Fitz later. But anyway, Fitz steps up to this fight and you find out that he's nicknamed Silent Fitz because he can silently cast spells, okay? And he's very powerful, and supposedly no one's beaten him. And so he steps up, and he does quickly end up taking out Lenia and Persia in a pretty decisive manner. He defeats him. He leaves no room for doubt. He puts him down pretty quick, even after getting hit directly with one of Lenia's little vocal wave things. Fitz is able to snap that by hitting his ears, like on the side. Like, he places his hands on the side of his head, like, really hard, and just slams his head, and is able to break through break that spell. And then silently cast, like, his own spells back at them, just leaving Lenia and Persia completely shocked and overwhelmed, because they had no idea that this person could actually do this, because most everyone who hadn't seen Fitz fight just thought it was fake that Fitz was able to use this silent casting. And so then this is basically what leads into them winning over the school. And then, I guess, defeating the delinquents and becoming the heroes of the school. And then she gets into she gets into the student council, and then before you know it, in her like second or third year there, she's the student council president. So, and at the end of all this chapter, that is when you have that scene that you saw in the anime where they're looking for recruits, for new magicians, and they have a they talk about how there's a precedent where sometimes if there's a great magician, it's good to find them from like away from the school. And Ariel is given a massive list of candidates, and this is when Fitz notices Rudeus on the list. However, Rudeus, his name is not Rudeus on that list. So this is where the anime kind of took some liberties and they changed a few things here. On that list in particular, the name is Quagmire Rudeus. Okay, now just keep this in mind. That's going to come back later in the early portions of this chapter. But whenever Fitz sees the name Quagmire Rudeus, he recognizes who this person is, and then makes the case to everybody that they should recruit this person. And then Ariel and them are skeptical of recruiting said person because they don't know if he can actually do the things that they say, you know, that he was really a saint level magic, a saint level mage at age 5, and all these feats that he supposedly did. Okay, and there's more feats that are listed on there that they didn't really go over in the anime because clearly they didn't want to spoil what is to come. So, and that's basically where that chapter leaves, and that's the final part of Volume 7. Now, to kick it back into the beginning, the reason why I started there is because that's where I think the anime might start with. I mean, considering what they showed us in the ED of episode 23, I just feel that that's probably the direction they're going to go. Like, they're going to show the background of Ariel and her, I guess, entourage, which, you know, includes Fitz and Luke, and there's another one, I can't remember their name. But anyway, this little entourage here, that's who I think they're going to show the backstory of in probably the first, like, maybe the first half or the first episode. And then they're going to get to that point where that you saw in ED where they decide they're going to send this out. And then it's going to flash. And then if they do it this way, it can flash back in time and then show what's happened to Rudeus. So Rudeus is headed out from the Fatoya region, like where he left after finding the will to step up to go save his mom again. He heads out and he goes on a very long journey by himself with no help, fights many monsters on the way, has to rely on his ability to use magic, you know, quite often, makes it all the way to this city, Rosenberg. And he makes it to Rosenberg, and he decides he's going to stay there for at least a year. Now, when he left the Fatoya region, I think he's 13. Yeah. He's 13 when he leaves the Fatoya region. When he gets to Rosenberg, he's almost, I want to say he's still 13, but he's about to be 14. Like, he's really close to his birthday, I guess. And he decides when he gets there, he needs to stay there a year because he feels that the only way that he can get to Zenith is that he needs somebody to recognize who he is. And then for everybody to, once they recognize who he is, to then know that he's looking for his mom. So Rudeus can't really contact Paul because, as we know from the ending of season one, you saw that thanks to the Demon Empress Kishirika, we figured out where Zenith supposedly is located, right? So Roxy and her group are headed that way, okay? Now, Paul clearly has been informed because he's still where he's at, so Roxy's gonna inform him. But they have really no way to contact Rudeus because Rudeus, his last known area would have been the Fatoya region because he told Paul that that's where he was going to drop Eris off. But they don't know if he stayed. all they know is that Rudy is what Rudy has told him. He said he would drop them off and then he would go search for his mother. But he didn't really give specifics as to where he's going to be. So Rudius is now headed to Rosenberg. So even if Paul and Roxy and anybody tried to get a hold of him, they wouldn't directly be able to find him. So this is the reason why he doesn't know exactly where his mom is, even though other people that he knows do know where his mom is. He doesn't know yet. So he makes it to Rosenberg and he begins to build his name. And he thinks initially what he needs to do as an A-rank adventurer. And by the way, he is an A-rank adventurer. He goes, first thing he does, he goes to the guild and he actually disbands the group Dead End. And so after disbanding the Dead End group, he kind of questions what Rudius or what Rudyard and Eris will think once they look at their adventure cards and see that he has completely dispelled the Dead End party. So now he's not in a party anymore. And Eris is still weighing heavily on his mind. Yes, he's out and about moving, and yes, he has the resolve to go save his mom. But Eris is still absolutely everything on his mind. That's all he can think about is Eris. That's all he wants to think about, really, is Eris. And he's just in a rut, and he's mentally just absolutely destroyed from a mental aspect because of Eris. And he has not recovered. And he's not going to recover right away. So once he makes it to Rosenberg, after disbanding Dead End, he then goes to look at the list of jobs. And so he starts planning a way to make his name as big as possible. So once he gets to the Adventure Guild, looks at the jobs, he decides he's going to take an A-rank mission by himself. And as an adventurer, he can take one lower than him or he can take one above him. So he's an A rank. So he could take a B or he could take an A or he can take one above him, which would be S. But seeing as he hasn't, in his words, he hasn't actually done an S rank mission by himself or anything, he feels confident he can handle an A rank mission. So when he takes the mission to the lady at the Adventurers Guild, she basically is hesitant to allow him to take it. And she tries to implore that he should take something a little easier, maybe like a B rank or something, because this A rank mission that he's trying to take is requiring him to kill like a pack of these bears, these bear monsters. Okay. And they're these big white colored bears with like a black stripe that goes from their head to their tail on top of their back. And they're these, you know, very vicious monsters. They travel in packs. It's wintertime in Rosenberg, and he's kind of in the mountains. So it's very snowy, very, like, it's not very good weather. And Rudius, of course, is adamantly telling her that, like, it doesn't matter to him. Like, he's plenty strong enough. And she's adamantly telling him, you know, no, I can't give you this in good faith. Like, I can't give this to you because if I do and you die, I'm going to be responsible. So Rudius doesn't care because he hasn't given up on life, but he's in a weird spot where, like, if he was to die right now, I don't think he would care. And that's kind of the projection that the author gives you during this entire scene, is almost like Rudy has no care for his actual well-being, how he is, how he's feeling. He doesn't care. He doesn't care what other people think either. And so as he's getting kind of loud and going on, you know, like going on with this leader of the Adventurers Guild there, another group shows up and they interject. And they offer, after seeing what was going on, they offer to jump in and join the mission with Rudy. And this mission this group that jumps in is called Counter Arrow, and they're a B rank adventuring group, and they're comprised of like five different people, and you've got like this one girl named Suzanne, you've got the leader, his name is Timothy, he's a magician, Suzanne's like a frontline tank or something. Then there's another guy, and then anyway. But then it gets to the main person who's there, and her, and this particular person, she's an archer, and her name is Sarah. And she's going to be important later. Now, she's a very pretty girl, described in the light novel, and obviously in the pictures for the light novel, she is very pretty. She's very well drawn. She's going to be your typical, you know, anime girl. She immediately just dislikes Rudy no matter what. So Rudy does end up accepting to go on the mission with them. And Suzanne and Timothy and the older members of the group. So Sarah is, you know, Rudy's age. But everybody else on this Counter Arrow is older. More like a Paul. Right, they're going to be in their, you know, late 20s, mid 20s, maybe even early 30s, and they've been doing it for a while. Okay, so each one of the older members immediately respects how potentially powerful Rudeus must be an A-rank adventurer at his age, and so they're willing to, I guess, accept that he is potentially powerful, and that he clearly has some issues going on, but, you know, you don't get the A rank for nothing. So they try to learn what they can about him, but Rudeus isn't very keen to opening up to anybody during this whole portion. And he very much so comes across as rude and just unwilling to work or to even try to build any relationship with these people. He doesn't want nothing to do with them. All he wants to do is go slaughter these bears, get the reward. He wants his name out. Well, he finally does explain, though, after being questioned about it, because they had overheard him talking to the adventure lady about it, that he needed to do this A-rank mission by himself because he wanted to build his name. And that's whenever Timothy and Suzanne and the older members of Counter Arrow end up talking to him, and they tell him that, look, if you want to build your name as an adventurer, you can't do it solo. If you do it solo, there's nobody there to tell these great stories of you to other people. No one's going to believe you. Even if you're successfully doing it or not, people won't believe you because the word of mouth won't be there. So they tell him the best way to get your name out there is for you to, you know, work with other members from other parties and do, you know, and work with different ones as much as you can and try to be really good at whatever it is you do, so that you build this reputation about yourself, and then eventually that reputation will lead to people asking directly for you for these missions, and then which could lead to people actually asking about what you particularly want them to ask about. And in Rudy's case, he does explain to them that he's looking for his mom, and his, you know, his family was caught up in the displacement incident, and that the only person left he hasn't located is his mom, and that he wants to find them. And so they, of course, the older members appear to be much more, I guess, a little more understanding about Rudeus, and they definitely see that he's an A-rank adventurer, and they know he's powerful, even though he has attitude and he's definitely rude and not wanting to open up, but they get it, that he's been through a lot. They can see this. Sarah, on the other hand, cannot see this. She's very immature. She doesn't see these things that Rudeus is struggling with and dealing with. So what ends up happening is she just has this massive attitude against Rudy. She doesn't like to be around him, doesn't like to work with him. And, you know, she doesn't like to work with him or anything like that. So I'm going to pause it right here. So again, she doesn't want anything to do with Rudeus, so she sees him as being rude and just unwilling to open up, and she just thinks that it's eventually going to harm the party because she's worried that, you know, Rudeus is probably not really actually strong enough, and that, you know, him being A-rank adventurer is probably just a product of other people carrying him and all this nonsense. So she doesn't believe that, since he refuses to open up and even tell them about what he can actually do. Because he also doesn't tell the group what his powers are. He just kind of he simply keeps most everything to himself. So because he doesn't tell anybody these things, she refuses to accept him and is worried that it's going to get the group in trouble. So during this very first mission, they go out, they track these bears down. You find out that Sarah is an excellent archer, even though they kind of refer to archers as being not necessary as an adventurer, because you should just learn magic is basically how it's explained, is that most people who would be an archer would just rather be a magician because they can fire off much more powerful attacks at distance and protect themselves better with magic. An archer has to be perfectly accurate with a bow and arrow and doesn't rely on melee combat either. So, but then again, they explain that a good archer can make up for that by being able to fire, you know, multiple arrows out at a time, like, and hit their targets. So I kind of get this sense that she's kind of like a Legolas from like Lord of the Rings, kind of. She's really good with, you know, a bow and arrow. She does end up showing off her skills after they find the first wave of these bears. They start to fight them off, but then they realize that they have completely misjudged the amount of bears that are actually there. Turns out to be there's a lot more than just, you know, 10 of these bears. And there's more like 60 or 70 of them. And these 60 or 70 monsters are very pissed off that Counter Arrow's group tried to take them out. So here they come. And they end up rushing the group Counter Arrow. And, you know, in order for them to, you know, retreat, Rudeus decides that he's going to take out as many as he can so that they can retreat. So Rudeus starts to stand his ground, but then the other members of Counter Arrow see that, like, Rudeus isn't, like, afraid of these monsters, and it kind of gives him this confidence that, okay, Rudeus must be, like, able to handle his own here, because elsewise he would retreat. And so Rudeus ends up basically wiping the floor with these, like, 70 monsters. Like, he uses one massive fire spell, and I can't wait to see this animated, but he uses a big, big fire spell. He ends up roasting pretty much everything. Like, he charcoals everything. In fact, he charcoaled some of them so bad that they couldn't even use the pelts to prove that they killed that particular monster. That's how bad he charcoaled some of these guys, okay? The few stragglers get killed by Sarah and by, you know, Suzanne and Timothy and these other guys. They end up killing the few extras. And then at this point, they realize that Rudeus is really powerful, and that they had only requested him to drop a quagmire spell to, like, slow these monsters down. And the quagmire spell is the one where he makes the mud and you sink into it, okay? And when they first had talked about their plan, that's what they wanted him to do. They just wanted him to cast a quagmire spell, and then their group would take out the monsters, and then they would be done. That was the plan. And initially, Rudeus does do this, and it works to some degree, but then once they realize that they're completely outnumbered and they've underestimated how many there actually are, and they realize that there's, you know, 70 or 60 or 70 of these instead of, you know, the 10, Rudeus ends up not only casting, like, a massive quagmire to slow these things down, but he also cast an extremely high level fire spell. And when he charcoals these things, they end up taking the pelts back to the adventure group. They turn them in, they pass they get the reward or whatnot. And then Rudeus just simply requests to the group, you know, that for them to, if anyone's ever asking for a mage, you know, to maybe if he's available, or if they know he's available, like, send him his way. And he also just wants them to simply pass on information that he's looking for his mom, and if anybody has any information for it, you know, to please come seek him out, and he'll listen to anything. And so that's kind of like his first venture with this group Counter Arrow. Then he goes on to work with many a group. And this is, like, akin to, like, I guess, going to be, like, very quick flashes of him just like working with a different group every day. And he basically just sits by the, you know, front of the Adventurers Guild, works with different people every day to build his name, to build, you know, that he's this like incredibly powerful magician, and all he wants is information on his mother, and that he's even willing to take less money, if not any money, if possible. Like he would easily trade any profits he made to the group for information about his mom. So he starts to get, you know, some form of reputation after being there several months. And then he goes on a mission again later on with Counter Arrow again, where they have to explore this like labyrinth type, this cave. And inside this cave, they're just supposed to collect these dragon scales, okay? And they have to collect these scales. But when they go down there, their plan is simple. They're just going to pick up the ones that the dragons have shed and that they don't need anymore. They're going to pick those up. They're not going to actually try to kill the dragon. They're just going to pick the ones up that are already on the ground. But when they go to do this, they end up running into, you know, these dragons. Now, granted, these are not described as dragons the same way that you saw in the first, I guess, season, whenever we see the dragons in part one and part two. These are these, like, the way they're described in the book is they're like a gecko, but they're really big. They don't have wings. They have four legs, but they're like a gecko. They crawl really fast, and they spit fire just like a dragon does. And they're very, like, aggressive, and they work in packs. And so Rudeus and them don't really want to fight these guys. They're just trying to get the scales. But anyway, you know, one thing leads to another, and they end up having to fight. And Rudeus, again, in this situation, offers to sacrifice himself to try and save Counter Arrow, because Counter Arrow is going to get caught up by, is going to get caught by these monsters. So Rudeus steps up and starts to fight them in this epic, like, you know, battle. Him versus, you know, there's like a whole horde of these things, and they're all bigger, and they're all stronger than he is. And he steps up and uses some of the, like, best attacks that we've seen him use against these creatures, and he takes them out one after another, after another, after another. And then Counter Arrow realizes that Rudeus is really freaking strong, so they run back to help him. And it's actually Sarah that has gotten the party to listen and decide, hey, we should go back and help him. He saved our life already once before. Like, I don't like him. He's a dick. But at the same time, I feel like we can't leave him here. So they go back to help him. They end up finishing off the last little bit. But at the same time, there's another adventuring group that happens to stumble upon them. They're also fighting these gecko monsters. And you find out that this particular group, after all said and done, after they, you know, clear the monster's den out, this particular group that they ran into is an S-rank adventuring group called Step Leader, I think. And the leader of this S-rank group is... he's definitely, like... he comes across initially as an asshole, okay? Keep in mind, he's actually, in my opinion, MVP of this arc, okay? But initially, when you see him in the anime, or when you're going to see him in the anime, and when you read him in the first pages of the first few books, or the first few chapters of Volume 7, he definitely is written as an asshole. He immediately gets into a fight with Rudeus and with Timothy, the leader of Counter Arrow. But Timothy doesn't fight back and allows the gentleman to, like, hit him. And of course, the leader of the Cesarate group realizes that they're not going to fight back. So then he questions why they're stealing their kills. And an argument ensues between everyone involved. And it turns into, it's explained that Step Leader was on another mission on another part of the labyrinth that they didn't know connected to this part of the labyrinth. Like, they thought, they didn't know that the two connected. basically there was like a wall that blocked this from ever connecting, but I guess whenever the gecko monsters tried to retreat from this from Step Leader, they end up busting through, and they actually connected the two parts together, so that's how everything got, you know, convoluted and confused. So Rudeus ends up telling him that, hey, you know, we're just here to collect the skills, man. Like, you know, back off. Like, let's collect skills. And, of course, then that guy says no. He goes, you only get to collect the skills off of one of these dead dragon things. He goes, we're the higher-ranked party. And then they explain that there's a precedence when this happens that the higher-ranked party gets to basically do whatever they want. The lower-ranked party, you know, has to listen. Like, basically, that's what it comes down to. So they decide that they're going to go and, like, I guess head back to where they started their part of their adventure. And then Rudeus, and also, keep in mind, the leader of Step Leader does not like Rudeus. He was very confrontational with him the entire time. Rudeus, of course, blew him off and was very, like, tried to play it off like he didn't really want to deal with him. But that just made the guy more mad because it just looked like Rudy was purposely trying to piss him off. So the guy really has it out for Rudeus. And even after he punched the leader, Tim, of Counter Arrow, he was willing to punch Rudeus. Of course, Rudeus was giving him that creepy smile that the guy calls and says that he's being creepy and needs to stop. And so eventually, when they go their separate ways, Rudeus and his group are able to pick one of the dragons, you know, completely cleaned, and they get all the parts and all the, you know, workable stuff, like the teeth and all the stuff from the dragon, the claws, all the normal stuff. And they get all the scales, and they still get all the scales that they found on the ground, and then they were able to head out. And they have more than enough to fulfill this quest, and they've made it back, and they end up, despite them not really liking Step Leader, they end up making it back and they turn in their stuff. But what they go to a different bar because they didn't really want to deal, because they knew Step Leader as the higher group was going to be partying and being, they were also going to be excited about completing their mission. So they'd be partying at the bar that they normally party at. And because that happened to be the same bar that Counter Arrow usually parties at, they decide to go to a different bar. Well, they go to that bar, they invite Rudeus. Rudeus actually accepts. This is the first time that he accepts to go do something with a group, because usually he gets done with the mission, goes straight to his room, gets his sleep, gets up, you know, goes to the Adventurers Guild, does his thing. Like, Rudeus has a routine. And you start to see that Rudeus doesn't like to break this routine. And he starts adding things to the routine, like working out, running. He starts to add, like, more and more and more things to his routine. Eventually, you know, he's like, he's doing push-ups, setups, like squats. He's running in the mornings. He does this every morning. And they even make a reference in one of the novels about One Punch Man, which I think is hilarious. I don't remember which, it's not this novel, but they do make a reference later on to One Punch Man, which I think is funny, about how he says, you know, he read a manga one time where the guy worked out and did all these, like, push-ups and setups, and he lost his hair and became bald. I mean, clearly talking about One Punch Man. So Rudeus is in this habit of working out. And he's been now in Rosenberg, you know, for like a year and a half. He's almost 15 at this point. And Rudeus has grown quite a lot. He's not going to look like the Rudeus you saw in part 2 of season 1. This is more of a teenage, closer to adulthood. He's almost 15. He's much taller, closer to not quite his dad's height yet, but very close. He's getting more muscular, more lean, like stronger, faster. His magic's getting stronger. So he ends up going and he parties with Counter Arrow for the first time. And lo and behold, the Step Leader guy shows up at that bar instead of going to the other bar. Shows up by himself, ends up, you know, picking a fight pretty much with Rudeus. Rudeus doesn't want to fight him, so, you know, does everything in his power to avoid this. And the leader keeps egging him on and basically calls him, you know, that he's not a man, that he won't step up, that he won't fight for anything he believes in, and blah, blah, blah. Rudeus just kind of lets him, just takes the insults, you know, head on. And then is eventually run out by the other leaders of Counter Era, who finally step up and tell him, hey, dude, like, back off. Like, we're just here doing our thing. Like, leave, you know? Like, go party with your group. So he finally leaves, and he just declares that he hates Rudeus even more, and that Rudeus is just trash to him, and that he doesn't like the way Rudeus looks, because he looks so gloomy and depressed, and just, he looks like an overall, just in his words, you know, a pile of shit all the time. So now some more time ends up passing, and Rudeus hasn't really been in contact with Counter Arrow or anything like that. And he's decided that he's still going to continue doing what he's doing. He's going to work with, you know, adventure group to adventure group, so that he can continue to get his name out there. His name is starting to take, more and more people are starting to know who he is. He, like, more and more of the city is figuring out who he is. And now he has a nickname. They call him Quagmire Rudeus they call him the Quagmire, like, initially. And the reason why they call him that again is because he casts, you know, as rumor puts it, he casts such a powerful Quagmire spell that even a low-rank adventuring group could kill, like, a horde of monsters that would be, like, an A-rank class. And Rudeus is basically hired by group to group just simply to go in and cast this Quagmire spell. Like, they don't ask him to do anything else. So he's spending a lot of time going group to group, casting the Quagmire spell, building his name. His only request is that he just wants any information about his mom. So this information is starting to spread throughout, like fire in the city of Rosenberg. Everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows that Quagmire is looking for his mom, and that he's even willing to take less profits. And then Rudeus ends up taking a very basic job, because as part of his workout strategy, he decides that since he's been, like, working out every day, that he wants to take a job that will allow him to build more, like, strength. So he takes, like, a very simple job where you just have to, like, shovel snow. And he wants to do this so he can build his upper body strength. And he ends up naming his, like, left arm and his right arm. I think one's Hercules and one's, I can't remember the other one. It's really silly. Like, he names his legs, you know, his quad muscles and everything. And he has this whole, like, conversation in his head with all the muscles talking to one another. It's really silly. But anyway, he goes to this place. It's, you know, wintertime again. And they've already, you know, changed seasons or whatever. It's back to wintertime again. And the snow's fallen. So he goes to shovel it. And he finds out that he's shoveling away. And then the guy says, hey, you know, you're Quagmire, right? And he goes, yeah. And he says, well, can you cast fire spell? And he goes, yes. And he goes, well, you could actually finish this job up if you need to finish it up by just melting all the snow. So Rudeus decides that he doesn't want to do that right away. So he continues to I guess, you know, plow the snow because he's trying to build his muscles up. But then eventually he gives in. And he does what the guy asked him to do. And he ends up melting all the snow. And he doesn't just melt, like, some of the snow. He literally melts, like, every bit of the snow within, like, a full city block of where he's at. Like, he melts everything. And he didn't even, like, mean to. He just put, in his word, he was like, I'm going to try to do this really simple. I don't want to melt too much. And he melts everything. So, clearly, you know, viewer or slash reader, you start to see that Rudy is really strong. Even when he's not trying to be strong, he's really strong. So he saves this little girl who happened to be, like, sick, and she had, like, you know, hypothermia, and she was probably going to have, you know, like, gangrene and, like, lose a limb and things like that as well. But Rudius notices her and goes over to where she's at. And he offers to heal her, and she doesn't want him to heal him And this is a little girl, keep in mind, and she doesn't want him to heal him. And he's like, I don't understand why. And she goes, because I don't have any money to pay you back. And he goes, you don't owe me anything. He goes, I'm doing this to be nice. And then she's, you know, shocked by this. And he, and she goes, well, you know, physically, I can't pay you back yet, but somebody else can. And then Rudeus is like, no, none of that's necessary. Like, I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart. Like, I'm doing this so you can keep working. And he's like, you clearly have a family or something going on in your life that you have to work this hard to pay for. So I'm going to, you know, help you out. So he casts a really strong healing spell and he heals her. And there's a lot of people that saw it. And they're all kind of, you know, amazed that Rudeus would just go out of his way and do it for free. So then Rudeus leaves and then he, you know, goes back to his adventuring. And he's, you know, group to group again, doing his thing. And then one day he runs into Counter Arrow, lo and behold, again. But this time he only runs into three of the members. And Sarah is not present. And Tim and Suzanne and this other guy is there. And they're all kind of talking amongst themselves. And they all look like really, I guess, sad and beat down. And Rudeus, you know, makes a joke that, oh, you know, where's Sarah and where's this other person at? And he basically makes a joke that they must have been dating or they must have gotten pregnant or something, because otherwise they would be there. And then it comes out that they're dead. And Rudeus is shocked by this because he didn't anticipate them to say this. And of course, Tim came out and was like, how could they be pregnant when they're dead? And this, like, absolutely kind of crushes Rudeus again, because this is the only group that he's been able to actually open up to even a little bit. He still hasn't fully opened up. Like, they still don't know his full story. They still don't know his background. They still don't know about Eris. They don't know anything really that much about him. But it's the only group that he has slightly opened up to. So, that being said, when he took this joking stance with them, he basically just misread the situation. Took a joking stance, made them mad. They pop off to him about them being dead. And so Rudeus gets quiet. And he asks, like, what happened? So they tell him, you know, they got attacked, ambushed by these, like, wolves, by these wolves or whatever, and that there was, you know, some other monsters that ambushed them, and they ended up, like, not being able to save Sarah and the other person of their group. And Rudeus, of course, asked where the last known location was, and they get the group gives Rudeus a general location, but they don't know exactly, because they go, you know, they probably dragged the bodies off. We're going to go out tomorrow to find them. And he goes, it's a blizzard out there. Like, we can't make it. And so Rudeus goes, okay. And so the group goes off to, like, plan their, I guess, their mission for the following day so that they can go and save Sarah, potentially at least just find their bodies. But that turns out not to be necessary, because Rudeus decides that he's gonna go by himself. So he heads out that day. Doesn't wait till the next day. He heads out that day. He goes straight to his place. He packs his bags. He gets his stuff. He heads out. He heads out in the general direction. He uses fire magic the whole time to, like, melt the snow around him so he can walk casually to the location. He ends up, the best way to describe this scene is going to be kind of like the way Anakin was when he came back and he slaughtered all the sand people for his mom. That is basically what, or how I interpreted when I read this. It has this very, like, dark feeling to it. Like, Rudeus just comes in there and he just slaughters everything. He kills so many monsters on the way. No mercy. Using his, like, stone cannon, quagmire, like, fire, water, everything, ice, everything he's doing, he is just cutting these monsters in two. And he ends up finding the head of not Sarah, but the other member that I can't that their name has completely slipped my head. But anyway, he finds just the head of this person, and it's been decapitated after he slaughters like 20 or 30 of these bear monster things, like what they killed initially. He kills all these bears, all these monsters, and inside, I guess, the stomach or inside, like, one of the monsters or whatever was the head of this particular adventurer. So Rudeus realizes that, okay, so this guy's dead. Sarah is probably dead too. Like, I need to at least find something. And then he finds a feather. Now, this feather, you'll see when she's drawn, she wears two, like, feather earrings. And they're, like, big feathers, too. Like, it's kind of weird. It's not too weird. It looks cool in the drawing, so, like, I'm okay with it. But basically, like, two feathers stick through her ear. And there's one that he finds here. So, initially, Rudeus thinks that, okay, like, I found an item that belonged to Sarah. So, at the minimum, I can bring the head back of this person and the feather back to the counter arrow so that they know that they officially died. So then he decides, after he gets a gut feeling that there's something he's missing, so he decides that he's going to continue to look, and he goes off to look some more, and he ends up running into like a tree, which is like a tree monster thing. It's like a big tree that's a monster that sucks the life force energy out of its victims. And he happens to notice that Sarah is stuck inside the tree. So Rudeus goes on the offensive, ends up cutting the tree down to the point where the tree just gives up. Like, Rudeus cuts all the branches off, everything. I mean, it's epic. It's epic moment in the light novel. The fight's going to be pretty cool watching when they do animate this. But Rudeus does handle this pretty well, and he ends up cutting the tree down to where the tree basically just gives up and just refuses to move. Goes into like a hibernation mode, I guess. And Rudeus decides that he's going to get, so he gets Sarah, and he decides he'll leave the tree alone because he's already done enough, and he got what he was looking for. When he gets Sarah, you know, is completely passed out. Her legs are broke, her arms broke, her ribs are broke. She's low on mana because this thing's been sucking her dry on mana. She is completely bruised. She's knocked out cold. She's literally ice cold. Like, she's, you know, basically all but dead. Rudeus only knows she's alive because the tree was clearly keeping her alive somehow, because she was still producing mana. So Rudeus takes her to like a cave, finds a cave, takes her there, you know, builds a shelter. So he takes her to the cave, and he builds a shelter, and he casts a you know, his strongest healing spell possible to heal her up. He ends up fixing her legs, her arms, bruised ribs. The hypothermia she was suffering from, he fixes all of this with his magic. And she finally comes to and realizes that Rudeus is the one that saved her. And she is, you know, completely shocked to see that Rudeus is the one that actually went out of his way to save her. And it is at this point that it has been a slow build throughout the novel, but it is at right here at this point that she has completely fallen for Rudy. Although she doesn't want to admit it, she has completely fallen head over heels for Rudy. And throughout the course of the novel, it's been building to this. Like, I haven't gone into great detail about it, but I mean, you know, like, essentially, she hates him in the beginning, starts to see that he's not all bad. I mean, she has her reasons for disliking him. Like, she like, the main reason that she doesn't like him initially is because she finds out that he's Rudeus Gray Rat, and she recognizes the Gray Rat name, and she sees it as him just playing adventurer. And that he's not a real adventurer, and that why would he leave the comfy of his home? And she doesn't believe his story that his family was caught up in the mana displacement. She doesn't believe anything he has to say. That's initially. as time goes on, she starts to realize that his story never changes. It's always like, my family was in the mono displacement. I'm looking for my mom. And she starts to realize that maybe he's telling the truth. So throughout the course of the volume, she, you know, wants to hang out with him. She invites him places, but he always denies it, always doesn't want to go. She wants him to go drinking after their adventures or whatever, and he never wants to do it. And then, you know, the one time he did go, they got in a fight with Step Leader. So it got ruined again. So her plan to eventually open up to Rudy throughout this entire process has been thwarted by Rudy for just not wanting to open up. But she has started to like him. And then at this point, once she realizes that Rudeus is the one that saved her, she's like, this is the breaking point. Like, she's in love with Rudeus. Like, at this point, she is in deeply love with Rudeus. And Rudeus doesn't feel that way about her. So he saves her. They make it to the, back to the town of Rosenberg. Counter Arrow, like, he heads straight there with no rest, despite her being tired and being all this stuff, and he doesn't care. And her, and she tries to ask if they can rest, but Rudy says no, and he doesn't tell her why. But in his mind, he decides that if they rest, they're gonna miss the actual Counter Arrow group departing, so they didn't want that to happen. So he wanted to get back as soon as possible. So he made it back. Counter Arrow was about to depart the following day, but when they make it there, they see that Sarah's fine. He gives them the head of the other member. They're devastated about that, but they are happy Sarah's alive. And everything... And, of course, Suzanne scolds Rudy for going out by himself because, you know, what had happened if he had failed or whatever. But then Timothy reminds him that, like, Rudeus is an A-rank adventurer, and that he outranks all of us, and that if anybody could have done it, it probably was him, and that he clearly did do it. And so there's, you know, a little bit of an argument amongst the group, but then they let it go because Sarah's the one that steps up and goes, hey, you know, I'm safe, sound, like, Rudy saved my life, I owe him. So, you know, Rudy's is going to go his own way again, and then is invited by Counter Arrow later to kind of, I guess, go and, like, drink and things like that. Well, so later Rudy decides he's gonna go, but then he finds out that this is all a ploy because actually Sarah wants to go with him by themselves. So Sarah has trapped Rudy into a date. Rudy doesn't look at it as a date initially, but she traps him into a date, and they end up going and they shop around for different trinkets and different, you know, equipment, new swords. She even asked Rudy's opinion on swords because she realizes that Rudeus is actually better with a sword than what she gave him credit for. And she wants something like that because she only uses bow and arrow. So Rudeus gives her a couple tips on picking out a good sword. You know, they pick out some armor. Rudeus even pays for some stuff for her because he's been saving a lot of money. He doesn't really spend it on himself. And she even makes the comment that he needs to get a new robe because he's still wearing the same one that when he first got there. And at this point, Rudeus is 15. Okay, he's become time. I think enough time has passed. He's went from like 13 to 15. And he, yeah, so he, yeah, he's either 14 or 15. It's hard to specify the time. I want to say he's 15. Like, at this point. But anyway, for all intents and purposes, we'll just say that he's still 14 for right now. But he has been in Rosenberg for a year. At least. And so they finish their little shopping day and they decide to go eat dinner. And she, you know, she starts to drink, and then, well, they eat dinner. It's a lovely dinner. And then they go to the bar and they start to drink. And then she's drinking heavily, and Rudy's not drinking. She's drinking very heavily, and she gets drunk, and then she wants to go back to Rudy's place. So she asks, hey, you know, let's go back to your place. So they decide to go. And Rudy is, and at this point, this is where, you know, I thought, okay, Rudy's going to sleep with her. We'll see what happens. Turns out that he doesn't sleep with her. He actually, because he's so psychologically screwed up from what happened with Eris, he's unable to sleep with her. And he actually ends up suffering from, like, ED. And this becomes, like, a pretty important plot point going forward for the next volume or so. He literally suffers from erectile dysfunction. So at this point, he can't sleep with her. But it's not his fault. He doesn't suffer from ED because he's physically not well. He's physically fine. He's suffering from ED because he's mentally distraught. He is absolutely mentally broken in every category because he still can't let Eris go. He still thinks about her constantly, even though he doesn't want to think about her, even though he hates it, he hates himself for it, he still thinks about it. He still thinks about her. And so he is unable to perform with Sarah. Sarah, not understanding the situation, and this is partly Rudy's fault. Rudy never explained the situation to Sarah. He never sat her down and said, hey, you know, like, I was with this, you know, one girl for like 7 years of my freaking life, man. And I absolutely love and adore this girl. And now she left me after we had sex. And he, you know, in his mind, she left, Rudy, like Rudyard left. I mean, he's crushed from like a friendship standpoint and a female standpoint. He's crushed. And this is the whole point of this volume, is that he doesn't trust other groups. He doesn't trust women. He doesn't trust other adventurers. He doesn't trust people. Because in his, you know, own world, if you trust anything, somebody will take it away from you. So he doesn't want to trust anything. And that goes for Sarah as well. Despite Sarah trying her best to, you know, make it work, it doesn't work. And so, anyway, over the course of this process, Sarah is not mature enough to understand what Rudeus is really going through. And she thinks that Rudeus just doesn't find her attractive because she's an adventurer and she's not like a noble. And all her feelings about how Rudeus is just noble and is lying to everybody and not telling the truth just kind of come out in one go. And just shows her lack of trust toward Rudeus, which is partly Rudeus's fault because he never explained the situation. But this is also greatly on Sarah's fault because she never gave Rudy a real chance to open up. Like, she wanted the answers now, and she wanted them immediately. Rudy wasn't willing to do that, so that's why they never could open up. I think if it had been a slow-built relationship, it might have worked. So she's mentally crushed by this as well, because she, again, thinks she's not attractive now. Rudy doesn't like her, and she feels dumb for doing what she did. So she leaves, goes back to Counter Arrow, tells Rudy that she doesn't want to see him anymore, and all this stuff. So now Rudy is really mentally distraught, because now Sarah's left him, hasn't given Sarah, and he sees it as he wasn't given an opportunity to explain, like, what's going on in his mind, like, why, like, what's happened to him. He hasn't been given the chance, and he didn't want to be given the chance, but now he feels responsible for how Sarah feels because he made her feel that way because he couldn't perform, even though it's not really his fault. This all goes back to Eris. So Rudy goes out to the bar and starts drinking. Okay, he gets hammered drunk, and lo and behold, the leader of Step Leader shows up again. The guy who was an asshole to him the whole time. The guy that, you know, we the reader, you the audience, when this is animated, are going to dislike he shows up, and this is where the MVP performance comes out, okay? This man shows up, and he basically allows Rudy to vent. He starts by picking on Rudy, like initially. But he notices that there's a look in Rudy's eyes that's a little bit different. And he knows that if he pushes a little bit more, he might be able to get Rudy to like let it, like let everything out and finally open up. Because the entire time, the whole reason why this guy didn't like Rudy was because Rudy just had this air of being an asshole, didn't want to deal with anybody, didn't want to talk to anybody, was rude to people, was purposely trying to avoid people, only wanted to be part of the group to find his mom, but wouldn't give many details, wouldn't talk about himself, wouldn't tell people his special abilities or what he could do. And it just rubbed that guy the wrong way. And all he ever wanted was to just find out, like, from Rudeus, like, who he is. And then if he could figure out, you know, about who Rudeus is as a person and why he's like the way he is, he wanted to help him. And so at this point, he decides that he's going to pick on him some more. So he does. And Rudeus finally, in a drunken state of rage, loses his shit. And he starts just waylaying on this S-Class Adventure. And no one in the bar breaks it up. Because most people in the bar saw it as Rudeus had every right to beat this guy to a pulp. Because he's been an asshole to him the entire time Rudeus has been in this town. And most of the people in town have come to actually like Rudeus, even though Rudeus hasn't opened up to anybody in town. Most people in town have seen Rudeus do these great deeds and have helped a lot of people and have, out of the kindness of his heart, even willing to take no money just to have information passed on that he's looking for his mom. So most people in town are on Rudeus' side. And even the other members of Step Leader aren't stepping in for this because the leader stops him from it. Like, he tells him no. Like, y'all stay back. Like, I'ma deal with this. And Rudeus is just beating the living crap out of this guy. Rudeus is on top of him, just pound him, and just kind of like what he did to Paul, but a lot more like violent. And finally, Rudeus starts to break down. And on like the 7th, 8th, 9th punch or whatever, tears start to just fall from Rudeus's face. And the guy realizes that Rudeus has finally broke. And now he needs to use this opportunity to pick him up and find out, like, about Rudeus. Find out why he is like he is. So they have this, like, bonding moment where I kind of look at it like this guy's like a big brother. And Rudeus ends up looking at him, and in the future, Rudeus does see him as a big older brother who ends up taking care of him. But this guy talks to Rudeus, and Rudeus tells him everything. Tells him about the Man of Displacement, tells him about Eris, tells him about Rudyard, the Superd, which, you know, to his surprise, he's shocked that that's the Dead End group that he was a part of, because he thought that group had been disbanded. And Rudeus explains, you know, that I did disband it when I first came here a year ago. And he goes, and I'm the last member. And he tells him that, you know, he's been just mentally beat down by all this stuff. And that's the reason why. And he's just desperately looking for his mother. So the guy listens to his story. And then Rudeus tells him what happened with Sarah and how, like, he tried to have sex with him, but it didn't work. His little man didn't work. And so the guy, you know, says, hey, look, I think that you're a great mage. Everyone in the town thinks you're a great mage. Even my other S-class adventurers think that you're a top-tier mage. And he says, let me help you. So he says, let's go to a brothel and we'll get you laid by a prostitute. It'll be a lot easier and it'll help you recover over this, like, unfortunate circumstance that's occurred. So they go to a prostitute. He sets him up with this really, like, top-tier prostitute. I guess she's, like, the number one prostitute in the town or whatever. And they, again, she tries everything to get Rudeus to wake up down there. Nothing happens. And Rudeus has already paid her the money, and so Rudeus decides that they don't need to do anything else because obviously that's not going to fix it. So then it becomes a counseling session, and she ends up like counseling Rudy because you find out that the little girl that Rudeus saved when she was when she had hypothermia and she was, you know, when he was doing the snowplow stuff, that little girl is the little sister of this prostitute. So this prostitute knows who Rudeus is and explains to Rudeus that like not many adventurers would just offer help to just random people for nothing. And so she feels obligated to help Rudeus in this situation. But she realizes that she can't help him sexually because Rudeus is too mentally unstable currently to actually do these things, like with a woman right now. So she counsels him and talks to him and gets him to just like release his, like, I guess more his story about what happened to him and things like that. And she is devastated for him because she sees how much he's actually suffering and realizes that this is the reason why, this is why he is how he is. And she comes to the conclusion after talking to the leader of Step Leader again, that if he's afraid of abandonment, he's afraid of women in general leaving him again, and he doesn't trust people. Because he can't trust anybody, he can't trust a woman. And because he can't trust, he can't perform. So she ends up taking him, walking him home because he's drunk. She walks him home, gets him to the home or whatever. And then she kisses him like on the forehead, you know, goodbye. And she tells him that she hopes that he returns as a future customer because she really wants to, like she would really like to please him because of what he did to save her sister. So he ends up being talking with the leader again, and he spouts off about how he didn't even like Sarah to begin with anyway, and she rushed him, and that, you know, she was flat-chested and that he didn't find her attractive, and he says some stuff he probably shouldn't have said when he was drunk. And lo and behold, Sarah and Suzanne are there. They overheard what he said because they had went looking for him and they couldn't find him. And they asked around town where he was at, and somebody told him that he headed out with the leader of Step Leader. So they were concerned that Step Leader was just, you know, beating him to a pulp for no reason at all. So they were worried about him. But when they found him drunk with the leader of Step Leader, trash talking Sarah. So Sarah walks up, immediately slaps Rudy, and is like, "We're done. I never want to see your face again. You're trash. Like you went and slept with a prostitute, and now you talk shit about me behind my back." And so she leaves. But this time Rudy's not crushed like he was before. And the step leader guy tells him, offers him at this point a chance. He says, "Hey, come with us. You don't have to join our team. You don't have to be one of the adventurers of Step Leader." And he goes, "But come with us and we'll travel around and you can continue doing exactly what you always do. You can go group to group. But when we leave a town, you leave with us." And Rudy kind of gets the impression that it's like he's unofficially joining the team. And so he asks, "Well, when are y'all leaving?" And the guy tells him, we're going to leave today. And then Rudeus realizes that this guy stayed out all night with him, tried to help him, has counseled him this entire time, and could have been at home sleeping, resting for their journey to leave, but didn't. And he did it all for him. So Rudeus decides that he is going to leave with the Step Leader group, and that he'll build his name that way, and that it's the best way to do it because it's an S-rank party. So if anybody can pass out information about how great Rudeus is to other people, it would be an S group adventuring party that could do it. So he heads out and he leaves. And then we get the perspective of Sarah, who's run all the way back to her group with Suzanne. And she's been up all night crying over the whole issue about Rudy not sleeping with her. And now she's even more distraught because she saw that Rudy was sleeping with a prostitute. Why was Rudy with this leader of Step Leader whenever Counter Arrow didn't even get along with them? Like, she couldn't understand, like, what was going on. And Suzanne, being an older woman, tells her that maybe there's something else going on. And that it might be wise to look into it before you pass judgment on to Rudy. And Sarah, you know, initially doesn't like the idea, but then comes to realize that maybe I should hear it directly from Rudeus himself. So the next day, Sarah gets up after, you know, several crying sessions and all this and things like that. She decides to go look for Rudeus, but she can't find him. He's nowhere at the Adventurers Guild because, unbeknownst to her, he's already left. He left the day before for good. And so she asks all around town, and everyone around town doesn't know where he's at. So she goes to where he stayed, and the innkeeper tells him that, you know, he had his bags packed. He left yesterday. And so now her only recourse is to go find the prostitute and find out what happened. So she goes back to that area where the brothel was at. She finds the prostitute. The prostitute immediately recognizes who Sarah is and then reprimands Sarah for her treatment of Rudy. And Sarah is shocked by this, and she basically tells Sarah that you're not mature enough to see Rudy right now, and that he's so mentally messed up from what's happened to his past. And she tells him, like, he never opened up to you and told you what happened with him. And Sarah is shocked that this prostitute seems to know more about Rudy than she does. And she says, well, can you tell me? And she goes, no, it's not my place to tell you anything. And he goes, if Rudeus doesn't trust you enough to tell you, then clearly, like, he's not going to tell you, and it's not my place to say. But she tells him that he suffers from erectile dysfunction right now because he's so mentally messed up from what happened to him in the past, and that he's struggling to get over it. So Sarah realizes that he didn't sleep with the prostitute. And she sees that Rudy is really, you know, actually a good guy, and that although he attempted to, he didn't do it, and that it's all because of his mental state and where he's at mentally that he's like the way he is. So she vows that if she ever sees him again, that she wants to at least apologize to him and tell him sorry for everything, and she hopes that one day Rudy will tell her his story about everything that happened to him in the past. And she says, you know, maybe one day if we meet again, I'll be older and I'll be able to understand, and we can be friends again. And that's the, like, the end of the novel. Okay, and then it rolls into the extra chapter. The very end of the novel, I think the final, the epilogue chapter, there's two random people are talking in a bar, and they're discussing this mage that they've heard about that goes group to group and helps people through these A or S rank adventures, and that he's really powerful, and that he's known for casting the Quagmire spell, and they call him the Quagmire, and that he's like a saint ranked mage, and he's really powerful. And nobody really knows his background. They just know that he's looking for his mom. And then there's all these different rumors about him. And the one guy goes, yeah, like, I've heard that he doesn't even take money. He just simply just wants, like, he doesn't even take, He doesn't take money, nothing. He, like, all he wants is information about his mom's whereabouts. And then that's whenever the door opens to the bar, and in walks Alanilaz. Now, Rudy hasn't met Alanilaz yet. Now, Alanilaz is the elf that has, you know, lots of sexual relations in part two, if you remember correctly. She shows up. She puts her hands on the table, and she flirts with the two gentlemen, and she goes, "Hey, can you tell me that story again about this mage?" And they're like, you know, they're totally turned on by her because she's hitting on them. And they end up, for sexual relations, they end up giving off all the information about Quagmire. And that's whenever she goes, "Is there anything else you can remember?" And the guy thinks, you know, long and hard about it, and he goes, "I think his name was Quagmire Rudeus." And then she smiles and takes them both to bed, has sex with them. Then it flashes forward to the, I guess, a little bit later, and they're, you know, passed out from just having, I guess, the best sex of their life. And she closes the door, and then the camera, it pans to her face, and she's smiling, and she goes, "I've found you." So now, she knows Rudeus is in the vicinity somewhere. She doesn't know where he's at, but she knows he was either in this town at some point, or he's nearby. And that's how the novel ends. So that's volume 7. That's kind of what's going to happen in the first 2-3 episodes of the upcoming season. So I definitely think that in total, volume 7 was a really good volume. It sets up, you know, like a meeting with Alanilaz down the road. And overall, it was a really good story. Like you get to see the progression of Rudy as a character, his growth as a mage, the fact that he becomes well known throughout all these little towns as Quagmire Rudeus, or the Quagmire. A lot of his stuff that he wanted to have done, or as far as getting his name out there, has he's been able to do that. And now, Alanilaz, because she was in Roxy's group, she knows where Zenith is at. So she is trying to catch up to Rudeus to relay this information. And that's basically where we leave off for Volume 7. So the next time I do a podcast, it's going to be about Volume 8, I think. I might actually do a top 10 podcast for my top 10 favorite anime of all time first. But if you enjoyed this review of Volume 7, you know, like, subscribe, whatever, comment down below what you think, you know, is going to happen next. I'll be reviewing the next volume as well. So appreciate anybody for tuning in, and I hope you liked it, and peace out.